Welcome to the Humans of HR, a community and a podcast about HR and the world of work, sharing conversations, interviews, and news to keep you informed and entertained.
We're not afraid to ask the questions or go where others won't go. We're real people having real conversations about real topics.
No hidden agendas, no cash for comment. We believe the future of work is now. We are the Humans of HR.
You ready?
Let's do this. Yes, let's do this. Welcome to another episode of the Humans of HR. My name's David Gazzarotto. Great to be here in the midst of not just a lockdown. We're sick of talking about lockdowns. What is going on at the moment? It's helping us get through lockdown is, of course, the Olympics. I love the Olympics. I always have. It's an exciting time of the year for me. And I think it's been made even more salient this time around. It's been great to have the distraction of the Olympics, but also with the weird Olympics in the midst of a COVID pandemic, what have we got? A very intimate view of the athletes, unencumbered by crowds or anything like that. I've really enjoyed being able to see the rawness, and I think it's made the experience even better. So brilliant. So in the midst of an Olympics, I thought today's episode would really focus on high performance. So I've got a couple of interesting takes on that. We're going to use the Human Instinct segment shortly to talk about high performance and how can we translate that into the corporate world. And then later in the episode, I've got an interview with Rob Cassidy from Coach Hub, who is going to help us unpack a bit more about how coaching can be used to drive high performance. So lots of interesting stuff. Looking forward to bringing that to you. Let's get cracking. On today's Human Instinct segment, I want to spend a bit of time focusing on high performance and particularly looking at what high performance sports organizations and HR have in common, I guess. And what draws me to it, obviously, is we're in the midst of a wonderful time. I've been a sports fanatic all my life, and I get so much joy out of an Olympics. And frankly, this Olympics, more than ever, I have just really appreciated and enjoyed everything about it, from, you know, the outstanding performances we've seen. I think the way the athletes have conducted themselves and shown their true human qualities has been exceptional. I felt inspired. I feel like the world's needed it. Maybe Tokyo and Japan could have done without it in the midst of their COVID outbreak, but let's put that to one side and just enjoy and appreciate it. So look, when I'm not watching sport or coaching it or playing it, I spend most of my time thinking about how organizations can improve the attraction, retention, and development of their talent. We can learn a lot from how professional sports organizations tackle these very same HR issues. If I was to ask you what you thought the core business of, say, the San Francisco 49ers or Manchester United, what it was, you would no doubt tell me it was football or perhaps selling merchandise. Well, in my view, you'd be wrong. They are in the business of managing talent. Everything else is an output or a byproduct of this fundamental activity of sourcing, attracting, retaining, developing, and at times offboarding that talent. With so much at stake in financial terms in this era of professional sports franchises, it's no wonder the football departments of these organizations are so incredibly well resourced. Consider the sorts of activities that are managed by these departments, from scouting for new young talent, attracting them to the roster, coaching and developing them coaching and developing the teams and the individual capabilities, managing their health and well-being, team culture and leadership, list management, mindset, match day strategy, to name but a few. The best franchises in the world are multi-billion dollar businesses due in large part to a consistent targeted approach to identifying and managing their talent year in, year out, from generation to generation. I've always thought that successful organizations in the corporate world could do well to align their HR functions along the same lines as the football department, to use that analogy. What if you repurposed your recruitment team to focus on talent sourcing and attraction as if you were looking for the next Lionel Messi? Why not morph that uninspiring compliance-centric L&D function into a crack team of specialist coaches intent on transforming mediocre midfielders into gun strikers who could make the difference between winning or losing against your competition? Perhaps instead of dealing with the tears and tissues, our HR business partners could look out for all of the extra stuff that helps to keep our talent healthy, happy, and motivated to bring their A game every time they enter the park for your firm. Food for thought, I reckon. Does your HR team operate like this? I'd love to hear about it. Well, welcome to a new segment on the Humans of HR that we're calling Around the Grounds. And Christian, great pleasure to welcome a great buddy of mine and co-conspirator Dave Nelson. Welcome to the team.
Dave, it's great to be a part of LeapGen and, more importantly, great to be joining you on the Humans of HR podcast. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. So you're a keen observer of what's going on in the world of work and certainly HR tech space. So looking forward to getting an Around the Grounds from you each week.
Looking forward to it.
So today, first up, I guess we're starting with some news from a space that's very close to your heart, the venture capital industry, where you spent a lot of time. So what's happening out there with some mega deals that have been announced?
Yeah, it was an area where I spent a lot of time. And recently, a couple of really important deals have been announced. So firstly, a Brizzy-based learning content marketplace, GoOne, raised a massive $272 million round. And that's just a few months after having raised about $40 million back in April. It's launched them right up into the unicorn category. Had a range of local and international backers like Salesforce, Microsoft, and SoftBank. So great news for GoOne. And hot on their heels was another HR tech startup, Employment Hero, who also closed a bumper $140 million round that also pushed their valuation up close to $1 billion.
Amazing.
And, whilst the valuations themselves are pretty headline grabbing and they do both have big international expansion plans, what I thought was most noteworthy was actually the scale of user growth that both of these businesses had achieved in that startup phase whilst focused mainly in this local market down here. GoOne had attracted more than 3.5 million users to its platform, and Employment Hero is being used by over 6,000 businesses, and it manages a quarter of a million employees, and they're aiming for 100 million in annual revenues this year. And I think those numbers are really, really encouraging, and it all adds up to further validation of Australia as a really hotbed of innovation in that HR sector. I know you stay close to a lot of emerging companies in that space, and so I think we'll be watching that sector for a lot more exciting startups to follow.
Absolutely. Amazing. Great stories, both of them too. So, thanks for that. So what else has piqued your interest this week, Dave?
Well, on a slightly more serious note, forget digital transformation and developing next generation leaders. Mental health is now HR's top priority. So I'm just going to repeat that for you, Dave. Mental health is now HR's top priority, bar none. So these are the findings of a recent HR sentiment survey of more than 200 senior HR leaders, which tracked a really marked shift in priorities from the early months of COVID-19 back last year to where they are now, a year and a half into the pandemic. HR's focus has moved to employee well-being, mental health, and diversity, equity, and inclusion. And for comparison, back last year, the survey had revealed that the top HR priorities at that time were employee experience, leadership development, learning transformation, and people analytics. So I think it really points to the growing mental health crisis that's happening around us. The pandemic has resulted in higher rates of depression, anxiety, stress, and burnout among employees. And as you well know, we at LeapGen talk loudly and often about the need for a whole person approach to HR. And this really emphasizes in my mind just how agile and connected HR leaders really are required to be these days to navigate the shifting priorities of the current climate. And we're here to give them hopefully all the tools and support they need for that job.
Yeah, indeed we are. So that's, yeah, very salient insight there from those two surveys. So thanks for sharing that. And lastly, what do you got for us?
And yes, another report that caught my eye has shown that there's faltering engagement among employees who are working from home and perhaps even more importantly, a lack of awareness about it from the higher-ups. Now, we know virtual working has mushroomed as an emergency response back in early 2020 to COVID, but the benefits that it brought both for employers with cost savings and employees with extra flexibility pushed many of us to consider it as a more permanent basis, at least a few days a week in what's been known as the hybrid model. And Dave, I really enjoyed the way you spoke about that topic of work from here in your Human Instincts segment a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, thanks, mate.
That said, there has been, I guess, a drawback of that virtual working model was that employees are increasingly feeling isolated and disengaged. And that's contributing both to a host of mental health problems and affecting quality of work. So you might be surprised to learn that more than 35% of employees in Australia feel less engaged while working from home compared to only 25% who feel more engaged. And an obvious explanation for that is the lack of FaceTime. So not only has it affected employee engagement levels, it appears to have put managers a bit out of touch with these employees' feelings, leading to a real disconnect. Now, as a manager, you may think you're doing a good job, but there's actually a disconnect between what you think and how your employees are feeling. And we know that disengagement by employees can have a number of dire consequences like poor motivation, lack of satisfaction, and ultimately lack of productivity, all of which can manifest itself in absenteeism and a difficult environment leading to impacts on revenue and turnover. This disconnect really just validates the need to have a better measure of engagement, find an improved voice of employee and get some actionable insights about your team that you can recognise and appropriately reward even in this virtual working from home environment.
Yeah, very interesting. Again, because you've certainly uncovered some gold this week, Dave, and what a great debut for the Around the Ground segment. Plenty of, I'm sure, any of you out there who resonate with that, make sure you connect to us at the website at Humans of HR. And I know, Dave, you're up and about, keen to engage on any of these topics and certainly look forward to the gems you uncover when we next bring this Around the Ground segment.
Cheers, Dave. Looking forward to being a part of the conversation, mate. Thanks a lot.
Welcome back to the Humans of HR. I'm really pleased to be joined by Rob Cassidy from Coach Hub. G'day, Rob. How are you going?
Very well. Thanks, Dave. Yourself?
Pretty good. I mean, we're in lockdowns. You're in Melbourne, I'm in Sydney, and I think we've all got enough experience now of various types of lockdowns. How are you getting on at the moment?
We're free at the moment, but the signs are we might be heading towards lockdown 6.0. Fingers crossed it's only a short one.
Yeah. Oh, well, it gives us time to have a bit of a chat over the Zoom. So I'm wrapped that you can make the time, and I'm really looking forward to connecting with you. Before we sort of get stuck into, I want to talk about high performance because you and I are exemplars of what high-performing elite sporting people look like. And I say that jokingly, obviously, or for me. But we've got Olympics going on, so, you know, I think it's timely to kind of have a think about high performance.
Yes, for sure.
So we'll do that, but perhaps for the benefit of the audience and for me, really, I always ask people this question when they come on. What was the sliding door that got you where you are now in this kind of funky world of HR tech?
Very good question, and my background is quite an intriguing one. I'm a scientist by qualification, so I actually started my career in pharmaceutical manufacturing as a microbiology trainer.
That's amazing because there's a lot of scientists at the moment who don't have any qualifications around this pandemic. I'm probably one of them. I'm an epidemiologist now, fully credentialed. You're an actual So you're an actual scientist and a microbiologist. That's really cool.
Yes, yes. So that was the first 7 or 8 years of my career was in that pharmaceutical manufacturing space. I found fairly quickly, though, that I actually get along better with people than I do bacteria. So gravitated towards the training side of things. So from there, I moved into writing, delivering and selling leadership training. Mm-hmm. And that really excites me. It really energizes me. I've got a real passion for that. But I also discovered that I was really good at the sales side of it, really uncovering the issues within organizations and then finding the right solution to match it. And with everything that was happening around that time, sort of around 2009, 2010, stepping into the tech platforms that support that people side of things was a obvious progression for me. Mm-hmm. So I moved into that HR tech space around that time, and that's where I've been ever since. And in terms of moving to Coach Hub, it's a real alignment of those three passions, the passion for the leadership development and the people side of things, the passion for the tech and tech-supported people processes, and then the passion for sales. So Beautiful. Aligns all of those things, and it's really exciting.
Fantastic. Yeah, well, certainly our paths have crossed numerous times over the years. Always enjoy a bit of banter. No matter what context that's been, I think we might have even crossed paths in various parts of the world at conferences, which is always a good time to solve the problems of the world. really interested just to I guess the Coach Hub story. It's quite a salient point in time now for some new tooling to come in, particularly from a development and from a supporting people on their own journeys. So, interested just to learn a little more about what are the particular problems that you are solving with Coach Hub?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So in terms of coaching historically, it's been something that's been offered to usually executive top level. And I guess the irony there is that it's actually those aspiring leaders, the new talent, the new leaders who could benefit the most from coaching. So the types of issues that we're solving through coaching and delivering at all levels of leadership across the business is around creating more engagement in the workforce, creating a better employee experience, and supporting those leaders in becoming the best they can be in terms of leadership. It's one of those things people tend to move into a leadership role because of the experience they've had, whatever it is, making widgets, selling nasal brushes, whatever it is that they might be doing. And they're not really given as much support as they could be to step into a leadership and start managing people and build on those sort of softer skills that leaders need, like your resilience and your mentoring and coaching abilities the sorts of tools that are really important if you're a leader.
Yeah, and look, I think we've already known, we've always known that those are really important, and the battles always raged around HR and other functions and organizations about the value and the virtue of the soft skills versus the hard skills. I think personally the pandemic has just been, if there is an upside, and there is certainly upside, right, from the pandemic itself, despite all the despair and misery that we've experienced. But one of them is this real, the highlighting of what humans bring in the world of work. And humanity has never been more important than it is now. So what you've just said around, being able to be more effective with the uniquely human skills, that's really adding a lot of value now and being seen for what it is. That's
yeah, for sure. And it's so much more important too when you're a lot of leaders in today's climate are managing teams that they don't get to see on a daily basis. They don't have that face-to-face interaction where you might be able to pick up on other cues that make you more interrelatable. And if you've got a coach there, someone to support, say, oh, look, I don't think I'm quite engaging with this individual well. This is the cues they gave me. These are the signs. You've got that person there to support and have that conversation with and really enable you as a leader to be the best that you can be. And that's what, at the essence of all coaching, it's all around that self-regulated learning and enabling an individual to become the best that they can be. And, you know, at CoachUp, we use the term explore the greater you. So it's all about, you know, really having that safe environment that you can have those conversations and really explore the challenges you're facing and talk with someone that you know. We use the term psychological safety, that there's not going to be any repercussions. There's no impact on your career progression if you're speaking to this trusted advisor about the challenges you're facing on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I know Seth Godin on his blog put something else, put an article out the other week. I know you reposted it, so you're across it. Talked about the coaching paradox, and I thought it was really, really insightful. And it's almost bleeding obvious, right? We see it all around us. We're seeing it in the Olympics now. Athletes, he says, you know, pianists, orators, doesn't matter what your pursuit is, you have coaches, and it's a normal and important element of helping you to achieve your best in those contexts. Yet in the world of business, it's the exception rather than the rule. And as you said, where it does tend to get laid in is probably when we're trying to remediate. Like, you know, and it's often at the executive level we think, oh, we need to help this person develop more empathy, this executive, to lead better. So we'll remediate that with coaching. But I guess what I'm hearing from you in describing CoachUp, and I want to explore this a bit more broadly, is coaching's more democratic than that. It's about helping you to be the best version of self. Would you say exploring?
The greater you.
Thank you very much. So why shouldn't it be the rule? And if it is a rule, no matter whether it's your kids being coached by, you know, a couple of dads in the under 12s footy, or you've got the best coach, you know, turning you into a Usain Bolt, the coach's role is normal and it's important at all stages. So how do you reflect on that, I guess?
Yeah, look, it's an extremely valid point, and there would be no one who's participating in the Olympics that doesn't have a coach.
Yeah.
Everyone would have a coach, and you even mentioned junior sporting teams. They have coaches.
What about Novak Djokovic? Can anyone be bothered to coach him?
I think he's had a few different coaches over the years, but he would have a coach and wouldn't have got to where he is if he hadn't had coaching there. And, you know, you look at all the top performers in the business world and the top performing organisations in the business world as well, coaching's a big part of their development and a big part of their culture within the organisation. Yeah. So, you know, some organisations opt for the internal coaching model. We're advocates for the external coaching model, predominantly because it creates that environment of psychological safety. That is achievable with internal coaching, but it takes a lot of work to create an environment where employees really feel comfortable opening up to a manager or someone that they know within the organization. In fact, just the other day I was having a conversation with an organizational development leader from a fairly large organization. And they want to move away from that internal model. They said, right, we've got a pool of internal coaches, but we don't feel like they're the right coach for everyone in the organization. But they've had some feedback that certain people, they just don't feel like they can open up properly because of that perceived lack of psychological safety.
Do you think the parallel there is being coached by your dad? Like I find, you know, my kids and I'm sure this is true quite broadly, you know, they do respond to other coaches, particularly if they've got actual expertise, unlike their dad. but is that a kind of relevant parallel, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. So, you know, if you take parents in general, you know, they have that, you know, really intimate relationship with you you've been brought up in a certain way to respond to them in a certain manner. And the whole idea of a coach is they can analyze or digest the information you give them and then respond in a completely unbiased, non-judgmental, non-hierarchical manner, really keeping it The coach and the coachee are on a level playing field. There is nobody who's above or below in terms of that hierarchy. And you don't get that with a parent-child relationship. The parent is always perceived to be, and likewise manager and reportee, the manager is perceived to be higher up in terms of that hierarchy.
Yeah, a power element to it which can compromise, I guess, the purity of any of the coaching. It can enhance it where needed too, obviously.
And it can also blend because you then start moving away from the coaching side and move towards mentoring.
Yeah.
Where you've got that person who is more experienced and brings certain advice to the table that a coach is not really there to do. A coach is there to promote that self-learning.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I think too, there is coaching in the technical side of what you do. So that's kind of, you know, there's often no substitute for the old hand in the organization who's done it, you know, for 20 years and being able to guide you on the technicalities of particular, you know, skills-based elements to what you do, or, you know, how to use your judgment in different situations. I think there's value in that. But that external person, as you say, in a psychologically safe manner, helping you with your mindset too. I've been listening a lot to Ben Crowe, who's Ash Barty's mindset coach. He's got a lot of press lately. And I just think that that's a really important piece of the puzzle that quite often we overlook. And I think in organizations, we're so focused on what are the skills and competencies required to perform a particular job as that job's been designed. And often we don't look at the human themselves who's in that role. We just look at, you know, what do they have on their list of skills and is it applicable to that particular job? And then we go, why aren't they performing? They've got all those attributes. So I do think there's a lot more that could and should be done. We're seeing it in the sporting world a lot. I think if you look at high performance in any of those sporting contexts now, we see so much more focus now on how to help people with the mindset piece as much as any of the technical elements of what they're doing.
Yeah, definitely. Mindset's a huge piece of the equation. And taking the sporting analogy even further, someone like David Mundy over playing for Fremantle, Dockers, you know, he's in his mid-30s, but he's playing the best football, and he attributes that to his mindset and how he approaches everything he does on a day-to-day basis. And similarly, he's got a mindset coach as well, like Ash Barty. So mindset makes a massive difference. For those of you who aren't familiar with AFL, people in their mid-30s usually are on the door of retirement, not playing the best footy of their lives. So, it's testament to the power of having the right mindset and what it can do for you.
Yeah. So how do we play that into organisations? So it's obvious that, you know, Fremantle Footy Club, you know, they know the value and the importance of that because they see it they can see it play out. There's no more instant feedback than being a high performance sports athlete or team, right? You know, as Richmond's getting the brunt of at the moment, you know, I'm sure the feedback from their fans is loud and clear at the moment about how they're getting on. But often we don't get that direct feedback in the organizational or in business or corporate context. How do we enable that? Is that
that's another really good question. So, you know, there's a number of different ways you can look at this. You need to create the right environment that promotes people and encourages people to explore the right mindset. And that's, you know, a lot of organizations have their values up on the wall, you know, people first, innovation, inspiration, these type of things, but then they don't follow through by promoting and creating activities. And for example, at Coach Hub, we get paid a certain amount to subscribe to apps that promote wellness in general, but mindset is one of those. For example, I use my money to pay for an annual subscription for Headspace. I do my daily mentoring every 2 to 5 minutes in the morning. That's not a lot of time, but it's enough to get you in the right mindset, get you focused. But that's just one example, and it's going to be different depending on who you are, but you need to have the right environment that promotes and gets people to think about that as well, because it's not the first thing you think about when you step into a leadership role. As you say, you're focusing on KPIs. What am I supposed to be achieving in this role? What should I be focusing my attention on? As opposed to ultimately, what's the goal I'm trying to achieve? And what type of person do I need to be? Not what do I need to do, but who do I need to be that's going to enable me to best achieve that goal? So I think that's what we need to look more at, is who do we need to be to get to where we need to get to, as opposed to what are we doing now?
Yeah, that's interesting. One of the angles that Ben Crowe uses, I like his messaging. It's very simple, very powerful from its simplicity. And he talks about the difference between a human being versus a human doing, and that, you know, we should aspire to be human beings first, right? That's a bloody obvious thing to say. But everything in what we do in a lot of aspects of our lives, particularly in the work context, is about doing. It's productivity. Like, have you been at your desk for long enough, right? Why aren't you working harder, you know?
How many calls have you made? How many emails have you sent? Yeah.
Yeah. He also said when someone asks you how you are and your answer is busy, is busy actually an emotion? Is it a feeling? No, it's not, right? That's not something.
Doesn't mean
it
anything.
Isn't what you're being, it's what you're doing. So it's interesting, and we've got to reframe some of that, I think, don't we? Organizations have got to stop thinking about human doing and perhaps value the human being more. There we go. There's a quotable quote.
Yep. Let's do it. I definitely think that's the path forward, and particularly with the hybrid or the remote working, you've got to be seen to be human. And you need to create an environment where your team or your colleagues are really comfortable to deal and relate to you. And there's not that constant fear of repercussion if you're not doing. It's all about your being, and you're working towards a goal, progressing towards a goal.
Yeah. So in my mind, I think we have to be looking at performance through a different lens as well. And I know a lot of organizations are doing this. I'm sure you're seeing it too, is where we're saying it's not so much about the output, the amount of hours worked or whatever measurements. We've done a lot of that. A lot of traditional structures of work and productivity have been around, you know, how much have you applied rather than what's the outcome you've produced. I do think we're getting better at thinking outcome. I know the OKR movement is becoming quite starting to dominate thinking a bit, but that kind of critical view of outcome versus output, that's got to be at the heart of being able to do this better, do you think?
Yeah, and you know, just looking at some of the tech that's out there, CultureAmp is an example that is tackling this very problem. You know, how do you define what people need to achieve, and then how are you measuring their performance in terms of progression towards that goal? And you know, you see in their recent capital raise, their valuation has just gone through the roof, because they have focused on outputs and outcomes as opposed to activity. And you still need to measure your progress towards achieving that outcome. That's still very important, but you need to define what that outcome is, and then measure his success towards achieving it.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I think what we're looking at there too is the difference between something that's value extraction. So we're trying to create more efficiencies, more productivity, better outputs from each effort, you know, each minute of time. All of that was in a paradigm that was about humans being just another part of a economic cost model. And that all we were doing was trying to extract more value out of it. What you're talking about in my mind is creating value. So if we can actually focus on making people perform better, bring their best selves, grow, that creates value. It doesn't take it out. And I think that's a really interesting dichotomy too. Because a lot of investment, you know, we're in the HR tech space, and a lot of business cases are predicated on what are you removing to fund this? You know, how, what's the ROI? It's about taking stuff out. I wonder those organizations that are really pushed hard with the likes of Culture Amp, surely their business cases are more about this is what we're creating. This is the expansionary opportunity of deploying these sorts of tools. It's a challenging one. Are you seeing any of that in the spaces you're poking around?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it's interesting that, that you deal with your organisations that are a bit more mature, I suppose, in the thinking about this, and they've got a clearly defined mission as an organisation, and that mission could be, you know, 5 to 10 years sort of time frame. Yeah. If you look at Coach Hub, democratise coaching globally by 2030, so enable every employee to have access to a coach. That's our mission, you know, yeah. and that's the goal of the organisation. Everything we do works back from that.
Mm-hmm.
And we have smaller and smaller OKRs down to monthly OKRs that are all working towards achieving that ultimate goal.
Yeah.
And that's what a mature organization looks at, that they have that overarching mission and then every departmental and individual goal is broken down and worked towards how does that achieve, how does that help us get towards that?
Mm.
And, you know, a good analogy that Maddie, one of our founders, used recently was, you know, when JFK in the 60s about getting to the moon by the end of the decade, he then went on a tour the very next year in 1962 of NASA. And there was a janitor who was sweeping the floor and asked, well, how are you, what are you doing? Or what do you do at NASA? And he goes, oh, I'm helping people get to the moon. You know, that was part of his goal and aligned. He knew that that's what the business was working towards, and he was an integral part of that, even though he was just keeping that area clean and making it easier for the people who are actually going to go to the moon to work in a clean and safe environment. So, you know, that's an example of how you've got to have the right mindset, and you've got to filter that all the way down, all levels of the organization, that every individual knows what they're doing is contributing to the greater goal and how is it contributing to the greater goal.
Mm. Yeah, that's fundamentally purpose, isn't it, right? Having that such clarity on purpose that doesn't matter whether you're in, as you say, the most complex, sophisticated role in that organization or you're performing more menial stuff. It's that alignment to say, when I'm doing this, this is what it's rolling up to, and being able to authentically align yourself and feel supported and feel comfortable. Goes back to psychological safety as well.
Exactly. Yeah, and, you know, my personal purpose, help leaders be the best they can be. That is at the essence of everything I do. It's also at the essence of everything Coach Hub does. So there's a real tight alignment between what I want to do and achieve in the world and what Coach Hub is working towards achieving in the world.
Yeah.
So that works really well for me.
Yeah, and it's those very simple, straightforward purpose statements that help us just to continue to stay focused as well. You know, we're here to make the world of work better.
Exactly. You know,
we can do it. LeapGen is about driving towards that. So, as you say, I can wake up every morning and go, well, what's my personal contribution to that today? Interviewing Rob Cassidy, perhaps. That's got to make the world of work a better place. Hope has.
one would hope. You know, I'm glad we're not relying on those amazing sporting skills that you brought up at the start of the conversation.
Well, Rob, without, you know, being too flippant about it, the listeners can't see this, but I can see behind you a pretty impressive framed picture of someone performing some greatness. Is that you, and what was the context?
Yes, that is me. That's when I ran the Melbourne Marathon back in 2011. I finished the Melbourne Marathon. And that was, you talk about goals, that was a goal that I set for myself. I wanted to run a marathon. I've never been a runner, and I'm still not a runner. But I've dedicated 12 months of training and preparation and various races in between to get to the level that I could need to be to run a marathon. And I ran the marathon, and I've not run one again since.
Is that right? That,
I'm very goal-focused as an individual, and I just wanted to run a marathon. That was something that I set my mind to, and through the right coaches. I had a coach that helped me train and gave me a training program that I did on a weekly basis for that marathon. So,
I love it. What a great example of just how you can apply that. Yeah, what often we do see is that sort of goal setting and coaching and support for performance being in that context of sport. But we know and we can see the value and the virtue of that, not just being the domain of, you know, high performance sport and our wonderful Olympians themselves. So, hey, I think on that wonderfully positive note, that's probably all we have time for today, Rob. But I know we've got so much more we could unpack together, and I'd love to do that again another time. Hey, thanks for being so open and sharing, and for being the high performing athlete you are in all contexts.
No worries, Dave. Thanks for having me along.
Absolutely, mate. We'll catch you again real soon.
See you later.
You've been listening to another episode of the Humans of HR podcast, powered by the team at LeapGen, and of course by you, our fabulous Humans of HR community. Be sure to spread the word and help us build this community. Leave a rating, review, and subscribe through your favourite podcast player. And head over to our website, humansofhr.com.au, for more great content and to connect to the community. Thanks for listening. Catch you next time.